Parshas Vayechi, we have the different brachos that Yaakov Avinu benches his children before he departs from this world. Begins with age order, Reuven, and then he turns to Shimon and Levi. And Shimon and Levi are the only ones that he links together. And he says, Shimon and Levi are comrades, achim. Their weaponry is a stolen craft. Unto their conspiracy may my soul not enter. With their congregation do not join. Oh, my honor. For in their rage they murdered people, and at their whim they maimed an ox. Accursed is their rage for its intent, and their wrath for its harsh. I will separate them from within Yaakov. I will disperse them and Israel. And as the Mefarshim note, this is in Source 2, it was describing that Shimon and Levi together as comrades because they worked in conspiracy together by perpetuating the violence against the city of Shechem, right, in the honor of Dinah, and they instigated the sale of Yosef, who is referred to as a shore, as an ox. Number of questions need to be understood. Question number one, which is probably the question, is in Source 3. If these are the brachos, and it ends by saying these are the brachos that Yaakov Avinu benched his children, it doesn't seem to be a bracha here. It seems to be a klala. It seems to be a curse. Cursed is their anger. My honor shouldn't be among them. He's scattering them, dispersing them among Israel. Where's the bracha? That's question one. Question two. We know, as Rabelsky points out in the Nei Yisrael, the brunt of Yaakovina's rebuke of Shimon and Levi addressed their anger. A person acting out of anger has lost control in this sense, and the two brothers' anger is intolerable. As a punishment, Yaakov scattered Shimon and Levi by taking away the privilege of an inheritance in Eretz Yisrael. Hashem hu nachlato. Hashem is his abortion, consequently he could not provide for his sustenance. He could only provide for his sustenance by traveling from place to place, collecting the trumos and maestros. Shimon, on the other hand, Rashi tells us that the vast majority of the poor, the scribes and the teachers of young children, are from Shimon. Thus, through either poverty or profession, they were required to travel far and wide. So ask Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. It's difficult to understand why the punishment of dispersion meted out to Shimon and Levi was accomplished by assigning them to two most critical positions of influence in Klal Yisrael, teaching the children, which was Shimon, the Melamdei Tinokos, and Levi, Yorum Shmatecha Yaakov, right, to teach Vitaratcha Yisrael, to teach the adults. Why? Who should be given the responsibility of teaching the children? It should be people who represent the greatest of mitos, the greatest of the character traits. Are these the type of people we want as role models? People whose anger is cursed, brutality? It makes no sense. So our second question is, if Yaakov Avinu is cursing them, we have to understand where is the bracha, where is the klala, the blessing and the curse one. Two, that he separated them from Yaakov and dispersing them in Israel. We have to understand what's going on here. How is it possible that Yaakov Avinu is taking these two tribes that he's just spoken about, their anger and how he doesn't want his name connected with them? How do we understand that they are the ones who are the role models for our children, for the future of Klal Yisrael? As the Dashraga brings down a beautiful idea from Rabbi Yerucham on the Mishnah, Moshe Zocha V'Zika Et HaRabi, that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to have the privilege of the Mizaka the Rabbi, of allowing the rest of the people to do Torah mitzvot. So he explains it a little bit differently. Moshe Zocha, when a person has the ability to be Zach, pure, and worked on their mitos, then Zika Terabim, then you can influence others. So how do we understand that Shimon and Levi were in this position? Related to that question is the double language. I will separate them within Yaakov, and I will disperse them in Israel. Is this just a double lashon? Or is there something significant about Yaakov versus Yisrael? That also has to be understood. And finally, we know that while Shevet Levi did not get a specific portion, they had the 48 cities throughout Israel, Shimon did indeed get a portion, but his portion was part of Yehuda's portion. What's the significance that Shimon is almost eaten up by Yehuda? Now we also have to try to understand. Again, Amir Hashem, we'll look at these ideas on two levels with the eye of what we can learn for our lives. Level number one. As Rav Lev points out in Source 8, the greatest blessing one can bestow is to enlighten another and acquaint him with himself. The Mishnah Rav says, man is precious, having been created in Hashem's image, even more so for having been informed that he was created in Hashem's image. Self-knowledge of one's abilities and talents, as well as one's shortcomings and limitation, is the greatest blessing. It is a means enabling one to realize his divine mission in this world. And that's what many of the Mefarshim will see it here in Rav Volbe, in Shirei Chumash, pick up. When we understand Ish Asher Kibir Chaso Berachotam, each one according to the blessing he blessed them, we have to understand that the blessing that Yaakov Avinu gave to Shimon and Levi, as well as to Reuven, was not the way we understand the blessing of, you know, you should be prosperous, etc. The blessing is the deepest type of blessing you can bless any person. And that is to be able to pinpoint for them what are their strengths and what are the weaknesses for them to be able to develop themselves to their fullest. And Rav Volbe speaks about, Midos ha'adam in Source 9, heim sugya amukah ma'ot. Understanding a person's midos, understanding a person's traits and character traits, is one of the deepest aspects of the understanding the human condition. The halavai sha'anu navina midotenu. Halavai, that we, and we'll talk about this for a few minutes now, Mir Tzashem, should understand what our core traits are. Adam Yachol, listen to this, my friends, it should resonate with all of us. Adam Yachol l'chyoda kol chayav. A person can live their entire lives without knowing what are their strengths and their weaknesses. That was the biggest bracha. He taught them what their strengths are. And Chazal tell us that when a person dies, three angels come and they say, get up and tell us your name. And the person who dies says, I don't remember my name. And again, we'll talk about this in Mirz Hashem next week. We talk about Parashat Shemot and the whole idea of what names are about. So we're going to leave really this idea a little bit more for next week. And this is why we have a Minhag Yisrael to say the Psukim with our beginning and end of our name. Again, we'll talk about it next week. But the question Rav Volbe speaks about, which is a little bit different, is how is it possible that a person is living in this world, they hear their name perhaps more than anything else, and then when it comes the time to leave this world, they don't remember their name? And the answer is, it's not just remembering their name, but what the name means is Shashem Shamalachim Sholim Et Amed. It's not just their name. My name is Sarah. My name is Yehuda. People remember their name. But rather, they want to know, what is your Mida? Mahu Mahutcha. Your name is your essence. A person can live for 80 years and not know who they are. And Rav Volbe continues, he says, a person will say, well, I was a generous person, I gave tzedakah. And the Malachim will say, yeah, you gave tzedakah, you did it for this interest, and you did it for this recognition, you really telling me your generosity? In this case, you weren't generous, and in that case, you weren't generous. And mita by mita, the Malach can knock down each and every one of our mitos. You know why? Because we ourselves aren't sure of what is our key mita. And he notes in 10, Shamati memashkiach zal, Rabbi Rucham, Shelechol adam yesh b'pnimiuto midah yesodit. We all have one core midah. Ve'ilu haya yodea mahi midato yesodit. And if we were to know, and we were to be able to pinpoint what this midah is, haya yachol al yada lishtalein bechol hamidot. That one midah is like the core that we could then be able to rectify and build all the rest of our midos. For example, let's take a child whose midah is MS. Even if the kid is going get in trouble, they'll never lie. Right? Who stole the cookie from the cookie jars? I did. Who did? I did. This kid is ready to say MS even with all the consequences. If we are able to point this media out to this child, wow, this is incredible. You don't have it in you to lie. You are media. You have the quality of truth through and through. This quality, if the child is aware of it, can then change the child's life. Later on, when he, I'm so lazy, I can't get up to go to shul. The midah of MS, truth says, I should daven in a minyan. I'll go up to go to shul. A chesed opportunity comes, just not in the mood. Midah of MS says that this is what I should be doing, I'll go to the chesed. The midah of emet, that quality of truth, will be able to transform all the other midos into a positive quality because you have that core. But if a child isn't made aware of this, and then over time it becomes weakened, so then they're not going to be able to recognize that they ever had this core midah, and then the ability to the asherut l'takeda midotav, the ability to rectify all their other midos, is lost. And my friends, just like there's a positive midah that is the core positive midah, likewise in the asterisks in 10, kach ze gam l'tzad hara, it works the opposite as well. Yesh ba'adam midah ra'ah achad yesodit, shemimena mistafim kol midot haro. We also have one major negative character trait that sets off everything. So, for example, and if you knew this, you would, you know, have your antennas up. So if a person's negative midah is anger, so in every situation, they may be triggered for anger. Or whatever other midah it is, it's going to trigger them, and it's going to have a domino effect in being able to have them just go from midechi el dechi down the slippery slope. This is the greatest bracha we can have. And that's why Rav Volbi, in his Sefer on Ali Shur and Chelek Aleph, he says, V'zelu ma'zeh gam mitzad amidot haraot yishna achad asher ba anu mekukalim biyoter, u'mistam amim kei yitzirah hi shut'am ofi kol adam l'tudato b'chayim kach, shedavka malato ativir amyuchere tuchal l'achriya midat hara'a shorashit asher bo. He says that the way Hashem created the world is that there is an interrelationship between our positive midah and our negative midah, that they're very much connected, and we'll talk about this in a few minutes, Mirtz Hashem, what that means, and therefore we would have the ability to take that positive midah and be able to impact the negative one as well. And that is why it is imperative that a person has in front of them really, what are my strengths and what are my weaknesses? Indeed, the Nesivos Shalom points out that one of the main reasons why Hashem has put us into this world is to develop that one positive midah and to work on that one negative midah. And it can be that a person can live 120 years, get up to Shemayim, and Hashem will say to him, tell me about yourself. And he'll say, well, I learned Torah, and I did good deeds, and what about that core midah? That midah? I was supposed to work on that? I wasn't even aware of it. They're going to say, you've missed the boat. Like, that is why I put you in this world. Everyone has Torah mitzvot to do, clearly. But you were supposed to take that one character trait, that one midah, and be able to enhance your Torah mitzvot through that midah, and take that one negative character trait and work on it and break it. That's why we're here in this world. And again, this is such a scary thought, my friend, how we can live our entire lives and we can go day by day and not be aware of what are our strengths and what our weaknesses. That is what Yaakov Avinu, going back to Rav Volpe in Shirei Chumash in 13 and 14, that is what Yaakov Avinu is doing here. He's telling the Shvatim, that is the greatest bracha. What is their midah hayesodit? By Shimon and Levi, their midah hayesodit is anger. By Reuven, by Yehuda, it's lahodo salamet, atayoducha achecha. Know what your quality is. So by Yehuda, he mentioned the positive quality, to be able to admit. By Shimon and Levi, it's that negative quality, by Reuven, the negative quality of it being impetuous, the pachas kamayim. This is the greatest gift. And he notes in 14 that in the times of the Gra tells us, the time we had prophets, Nevi'im, they were called the Roeh, the seer. Because the prophet could look into your eyes and see your Shurash Nishmatcha. He could see your core and say, this is why you're here. This is what you have to work on. We don't have that gift today, my friends. Wouldn't it be amazing if we had this gift? This is, without having this gift, we have to do the best we can to be able to try to access what these are. Just like to make a little bit of a suggestion on perhaps an approach on how to access this for our lives, because it's so fundamental. Like if we would first stop a moment, and if you're playing this on your own machines, to press pause for a moment and to ask yourself, what is my key positive mita? What is my key negative mita? And if it's not going to come to you like that, that already is significant. Nevertheless, sit down and work on it. And really ask yourself, because you can't move beyond in life without realizing, well, where am I going? And as Robinson Feldbrand notes in her Sefer on Grow, don't move aimlessly from one target to another. Create an incremental, interconnected plan for working on yourself. And we know that many good character traits are intertwined. For example, humility is connected to calmness, compassion, generosity. And that's why, since all the character traits are interconnected, working on one will automatically have a positive effect on all the others. So be able to pinpoint what that one is. Develop it. And I'll just add, before going on, that it's not only crucial we do this for ourselves, it is crucial because sometimes when we're challenged by ourselves, we need help from mentors and from friends to help us, guide us. It's even more crucial with our children, where we have that deep understanding of who they are, and still a little bit of objectivity, okay, maybe not so much, but a little bit more objectivity than they have, and be able to tell it to them, and over again. And when you tell that to your child, it builds them, and it directs them, and you say to them, like, I have one child whose koach is koach ha-ratzo. Right? Nothing will stand in her way if she has a rutzon, a desire to do something. So when she's challenged by something, I remind her. I say, you know what? This is your koach. It's koach ha-rutzon. Once you get your rutzon to do this, there's going to be nothing stopping you. And you're going to be very successful because you have that ability just to plow through all the obstacles to get to your core. That's your nature. So when a child hears this over and over again, they're able to say, hey, you know, I do have that in me. So I am able to overcome those obstacles instead of moving backwards. Whatever it is, this is what the gift we can give our children. The Pishnetzer Rebbe in 16, Reb Kalmanis Kalman Shapiro, compares character improvement to fighting a carefully planned war, where strategy is developed based on honest and thorough research. See what is really holding back improvement. Overcome the barrier. If one tactic does not work, try another, yet another, and with Hashem's help, we'll bring success. And we know that whenever we're working on ourselves, we have to recognize that we have to break it into doable pieces. So, for example, in 18, if you're working on anger, so instead of just resolving to be patient and never lose your temper in 18, Rav Volbe suggests taking a half hour of working on your patience every day, and changing that half hour to different parts of the day until it becomes part and parcel of your day that you have practiced being patient in many different situations. The key, however, is first, what are these root midos? This is the first step towards self-knowledge, for they are the foundations of our personality and behavior. Only through guiding our naturally good attributes, continues Robinson Feldbrand in 19, can man achieve perfection. In truth, the entire foundation of man's service is through the good attributes he naturally possesses. If he guards them and grasps them properly, never losing his natural goodness, he will attain his goal, perfecting his intelligence. Even his negative nature, midos, will turn to completely good. And she brings us a gevaldic example from the Hagos Ashri of Metzia. If Reuven buys a vessel from a non-Jew and then sells it to Shimon, believing it to be an inexpensive metal container, and Shimon later discovers it's pure silver, does Shimon have to pay Reuven more money? Shimon owes Reuven nothing. Since Reuven was unaware that he had a silver vessel, he never really owned a silver vessel. The same applies to a person who is unaware of his true greatness. He therefore has no greatness. Rabosai, is this not one of the saddest things that you can hear? That we can be filled with the greatest of blessings, but if we are unaware of what they are, it's as if we have nothing. Identifying these traits puts us on the road to perfection. And that is why she offers that as practical advice in 21, how can you perhaps, as an insight, access this? She says there are certain questions that can help you determine your strength. I feel best when my highest aspiration is to, the idea that has helped me the most is, and the one that I circle that resonates with me, and just personally me, is I respect people who, Rav Wolbe speaks about this as well, when you look at others and you really admire certain traits about them, every interaction we have is really a mirror of our own experiences. That we know. So when you constantly see, let's say, the midah of truth in this person, wow, they are so honest. Wow, I can't believe the honesty. And you're just seeing that trait of honesty in every person you meet. It means that that quality is an important quality for you. And likewise, the negative. They have no patience. I never saw so many people without patience. Well, perhaps that's a reflection that that is something that you see because it's something that's so glaring within yourself. So by looking at just, you know, like life as a laboratory, going around and observing people and seeing what you think about people, both their positive and negative traits, not in a judgmental way, but in just a more of a curious type of way, then you say, wow. Let me think about that. Let me see, why is it that I'm always seeing the following one or two things and everyone around me? How is that a reflection of where I'm at? And as an exercise in 22, make a list of the traits you feel you have. Put on the top of the list the trait you believe you excel in, and place at the bottom the trait that you feel is your weakest, and that gives you a sense, mamish, black on white, to see where you're holding. Final idea I want to do from her sefer, which is a fantastic sefer, I highly recommend. She speaks about different nekudos of self-growth, is the idea of Rav Chaim Vital. It's a very famous idea that there are four foundations of all character traits corresponding to the four fundamental elements of fire, water, air, and dust, which is earth. And this gets back to what we mentioned a few minutes ago, that the positive character trait is very much interlinked with the negative one, because they may be very much coming from the same place. So let's take examples. Fire represents one's intellect and corresponds to the desire to ascend in life and rule. Negative examples are haughtiness, anger, rigid authority, demanding honor, hatred, and stubbornness. Positive examples are modesty, humility, flexibility, and restraint. Air represents the power of speech. In the negative, it's idle chatter, flattery. In the positive, it's quick to praise, speaks Torah thoughts, provides emotional support. Water represents the spiritual background of the vital soul. A person forged from the character foundation will always show preference for physical pleasures. Lusting after money with the love of self-indulgence, who is likely to be jealous? When he has channeled this tendency to the good, he'll feel disgust in the face of unneeded physical pleasures. He'll be a trusting, caring individual. And finally, dust corresponds to spirituality of the body and will manifest itself as sadness, grief, laziness, hopelessness. And in the positive, it will be people who are satisfied with what they have and serve Hashem with simcha. And as we obviously will understand, that some character traits consist of more than one fundamental. An example of this is mocking others, which results from air, slander and cruelty, and fire, haughtiness. And that's Rabbeinu Yonah who adds this idea. So, to really make the picture complex, it's not only to be able to mark and to recognize our positive character traits and the negative ones, but to see where they come from and to see the interrelationship between the two. With this in mind, we understand that Yaakov Avinu, when he's cursing their anger, what he's telling them is that you need, as the Divrei Yisrael from Majlis in 25a points out, you need to take that anger, which is very much fire, and use it in the ability of the positive. Use it in the ability of perfecting others, of getting angry at those who go against Hashem's will. What we have to do is to take that negative character trait, once we're aware of it, and be able to channel it. Now, having said all of this, that Yaakov Avinu is pointing out to them that major negative character trait, and that was a blessing. Yaakov Avinu is indeed giving them a bracha of self-knowledge, not only in the negative, what they don't have, i.e., that they're missing, that they have a problem with their anger, obviously on the level of Shimon and Levi, but to a certain degree, he's also giving them a bracha of self-knowledge of their positive character traits as well. And that is alluded to in one word. Shimon v'Levi Achim. They are brothers. They have this feeling of camaraderie. They have this feeling of brotherhood. And this is, if you know, this is, and we'll develop this now, this is the quality trait of Shimon and Levi. The echpatiyut, as the Mikdash HaLevi notes in 25b, the real feeling of responsibility, of being, of caring for those around them. And that's the quality which a malame, which a teacher needs to have as well. The ability to feel a brother, to feel responsibility of one to another, pointing that character trait out, is indeed a positive bracha. Rav Belsky in Ein Yisrael brings a beautiful essay of Rav Kamenetsky Zatzal. And he says, you look at the story of Dina, right, where the brothers hear about what happened to Dina, and Yaakov Avinu is totally silent. It's the brothers who respond. Of all of his children, only Shimon and Levi understood what had to be done. They placed the responsibility for Dina squarely upon their own shoulders and carried out Yaakov's plan of rescue, returning Dina to safely. It was a fantastic display of achrayus, of accepting responsibility, even to the point of self-sacrifice. Shimon and Levi acted nobly, for they felt the intensity of Dina's disgrace. Shall he treat our sister as a harlot? Hakizonaya, said Achotenu. With this, Rav Kamenetsky resolved Yaakov Avinu's approval and disapproval of Shimon and Levi. Perhaps the most important quality a teacher or Rosh Yeshiva can possess is a deep sense of responsibility, achrayas, for his students. A good Rebbe is never satisfied simply with a well-organized shiur or lecture. The growth and success of every Talmid, of every student, concerns him. He addresses the problem and challenges that face his pupil, and tries with all his might to help them overcome the hurdles that they encounter. The litmus test of leadership is responsibility. We know, Chazal tell us, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu trained the great leaders, Moshe Rabbeinu, David HaMelech as shepherds, and the Avos HaKadoshim and the Shvatim were shepherds. When performed correctly, the task of teaching Torah is the ultimate expression of responsibility to Jewish people. The teacher of the Jewish nation are their shepherds. They work tirelessly to ensure the growth and success of their charges. For both sides, this is the highest level to be able to become the shepherd of Klal Yisrael. Hamelame Torah L'Amo Yisrael. That's how we describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day. That's the highest level. When Yaakov Avinu is seemingly is giving a curse, a critique to Shimon and Levi, there's very much found here in the spreading them out a bracha. I recognize that you have this issue with anger, but if you're able to channel this aspect, you can become the greatest Melamde Tinokos, because you have the ability of Achim, of Achrayus, of feeling responsible. And Shimon and Levi earned the privilege to be the teachers of Klal Yisrael because of all the brothers. They felt the strongest sense of responsibility. Thus, Yaakov Avinu's parting blessing was meant to prepare them for their central role in the development of the Jewish nation. Arur Apam, unbridled anger has no place in the process of Chinuch. But you can take that anger and you can channel it into pure responsibility. Then you are the greatest candidates for being the teachers of Klal Yisrael. You know, and I'm sure this is a maisa that repeats itself over and over, but one maisa that I read recently is of a principal who's going around in the school checking all the rooms to make sure that everything was okay before closing up. And he looked into one room, and he saw a Rebbe sitting there crying with a tehillim open. And he felt like, oh my, there must be something going on, someone sick in the family, or some sorrow. And he didn't want to disturb the Rebbe. And when the Rebbe was leaving, the principal, you know, very nicely went over to the Rebbe and said, you know, I don't mean to intrude, but I saw crying, saying tehillim, you know, is there something going on that can be of help, or be of emotional support, etc.? So the mechanech said, no, 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 Baruch Hashem, everything's fine in the family. He says, I have a student who tries so hard and just can't get it. Like his mind is closed. I was sitting and davening for this student that Hashem should open him up to be able to learn. And you know, the tefillos of this Rebbe were successful, and this Talmid became one of the best students of his over the year. Like, suddenly his mind just opened up. That's a melamed Torah. That's taking real responsibility for the children. And we know that any of you who are in Chinuch, who are listening to this, can vouch for this. What I'm about to say is that as a teacher, I spend more time dealing with this psychology and the lives of students than I do in a classroom, because that's really what it's about, building the entirety of the person, not just the intellectual part, but the who and what they are. And that is the hallmark of a teacher. There is another aspect, and that is that aspect of their passion. If it's used correctly, it's also the key quality in teaching. The Ohr Moshe, Rav Moshe Scheinerman, points out, he says, Mitzima kedosha kazo, in source 30, Eina mitbatzad kahogen ela idei elu osim yoter mechovatam mitzimatam. You need to have, as teachers, people who feel that sense of passion and responsibility to be the ones giving over the Torah to the next generation. Only someone who's a Baal Regesh, someone who is emotionally fired, can they be the Melamei Torah, the ones who teach Torah. Because it's not just about Yedios, giving over knowledge. You also have to feel the needs of others, and you have to be able to give over the Torah in a passionate type of way. He quotes a Gevaldik word from the Al Shechar Chatos. These things should be on your heart, and you teach your sons, and your sons, we know, are your children, or your students. Only one who has these things in the arrow in 30, gambil vavo, also in his heart, when you have Torah in your heart and you feel passionate about it, then you're able to give it over to your children. As the Dvir Kacho points out in 31, you want to know, aside from achrayus, aside from responsibility, what is a core that a teacher needs to have? He owes haritikha, being passionate, bubbling over. That's the only way you're going to reach them, and that's the only way that they're going to be able to be a kli kibul. And we know this with students. Which teachers do they really respond to and respect? Teachers that they know feel passionately about what they teach. That their whole lives is this. And they see it in this person. They're not just, you know, reading over some notes, but it's them. They're giving over Dvarim HaYotzim Min HaLev Nichnosim Min HaLev. That which is given from the heart enters that heart. That attribute of Shimon and Levi, of passion, if it is channeled correctly, has the greatest ability to be the hallmark of being the best Melamdei Tinokos. As Rav Zaitchik notes in 33, where he says, Bracha shitzav v'tzav shi bracha. It's a command as well as a bracha. And the Chizkuni notes this. Ein ze klala lebracha. Yehi ratzon shel yatzlichu ba'apam kedei shelo yargilu yorog zanim. The bracha is that you shouldn't use your anger to be angry at your students. You shouldn't use your anger in a negative way. But you should be able to do it as the passion of teaching Torah. And with this, And it's a fine line. You know, sometimes you have that quality and, you know, you can just explode, or you can be able, as Rav Zaitchik points out, to take that quality and know when it has to be nurtured, it has to be, you know, curtailed, and when it needs to really be found in the appropriate measure. And with this, we can appreciate in 34 what Limudei Nusan explains, why Levi was clearly scattered among all of Klai Yisrael, but our question of why Shimon was found in Dafka and Shevet Yehuda, why are they, like, found in that Shevet? And the answer, he says, is that they have a tremendous kinna. They are ready to have passion. But you have to be under a Yehuda, under Malchus, under people who are really have that wisdom and knowledge when it's appropriate, when not. So by Kadosh Baruch Hu putting Shimon in Yehuda's territory, it was making sure that that passion would be tempered and that it wouldn't explode in the wrong directions and can be used for the positive. So my friends, idea number one for today is, I think, a really directive for all of us. It's just not a klala, no, it's the greatest bracha. Halavai, we all have this bracha, the bracha of self-knowledge. Know your strength is your achim, your brotherhood. Your weakness or your challenge trait is your anger. And you have to be able to direct it toward the positive and realize that you have it and be aware of it and be aware of the positive trait as well and develop it and utilize it. And that's why they are the Malam Dei Tinokos, because if they can overcome their anger, that positive part of the fire and passion makes them the greatest of teachers. And their sense of responsibility makes them the greatest candidates to be teachers, because a teacher has to feel an achrayos, has to feel a responsibility for their charges. It's not just that, you know, they check in with attendance and then they leave, but they're in your hands for the entire time that you are their teacher. You need to help mold them, form them. Itamar Schwartz in a sefer on Chinuch speaks about that every teacher should not only have, you know, in their record book, you know, the grades of the student, but also what are the strengths of the students, what are the weaknesses of the student, and a plan that the teacher has to move the child to strengthen their strengths and to be able to work on their weaknesses. If a Rebbe, a Mechaneches, isn't doing that, then they've missed the boat. It's not just about a 90 in Chumash or 88 in Diktuk. It's about where is the child at, and we have to be educating on both levels at the same time. The other upshot of this first level, which is very much relevant to our lives, is what is our Kormita? And to be able to introspect and ask ourselves, if I had to choose one or two, this is who I am, what will I say after 120 years? What is your name? What is your mahos? What would I answer? What's my strength? What's my weakness? And how am I going about utilizing that strength to strengthen me in all my areas, because they're all interconnected? And how am I working on overcoming that weakness, step by step, slowly, slowly, so that at least I can say after 120 years, this is what I did to try and overcome these things. And that, my friends, we know is a lifetime of work, but lo achshav ematai, if we don't start it today, right now, when are we ever going to get to it? Okay, level number two. A whole different approach, but very similar. We know The mystical Sfarim speak about that Knesset Yisrael, Rav Wilson in 35, and Wellsprings of Faith, has two different aspects to it, a Leah aspect and a Rachel aspect. The Leah aspect is called the Alma Did Kasia, the concealed world, and the Rachel Imenu is called the Alma Did Scalia, the revealed world, and there's a lot of Torah. It's very mystical teaching. The Leah Imenu is buried in Hebron. It's a higher level. It's the level where you understand the complete connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and no matter what, every Jew is connected to the source. And the lower level, Leah Imenu is connected, as Rav Dessler spoke about, to the aspect of Yisroel, and Rachel Imenu is to Yaakov. It's the revealed world, depending on our actions. That's our relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. when we understand that Lea Imenu is coming from this higher place, this concealed world, we can appreciate Leah's children, particularly Shimon and Levi. When Moshe continued with Yaakov's blessing, this is Rav Hillel Adler in 36, it is not surprising he spoke favorably of Levi, but he totally disregarded Shimon. You know, you hear the laning for Zosa Bracha over and over again. Like, these are like great questions to ask people. Which one of the Shvatim is not mentioned? Which Shevet is mentioned last? Like, you hear it over and over again. You would think, after 50 years, you would know all these answers. The name of Shimon is omitted both in reference to blessing and to inheritance. Rather, Moshe Rabbeinu gave us a remez regarding Shimon, but didn't actually mention him at all. And when distributed the territories of Eretz Yisrael, Shimon did not get its own independent portion, but instead received several cities within the portion of Yehuda. There is this interconnection between Shimon and Yehuda. What is it? So when Shimon is born, the pasuk says, "Vayar Hashem ki snua Leah, vayiftach et rachma." That Hashem heard that Leah was, Hashem saw that Leah was despised, he opened her womb. This pasuk is quite puzzling. The Torah would take special caution in its language, not to speak of the shame of even an impure animal. How can you speak about the relationship between Yaakov Avinu and Leah Imenu as one of hatred? What must be understood is the word despise is not referring to the relationship between Yaakov and Leah. Obviously, it's a very complex topic that we've got to move beyond third grade in learning. And I have this because I teach some of these inyanim in seminary, and like the girls look in, like, you know, Leah Imenu is hated, and poor Leah Imenu, and poor people who are called Leah. Like, one of my goals is that Leah should walk out. Unfortunately, I have no Leahs this year in my class, only Rachel's, but that's okay. Now, Leah should walk out feeling, wow, amazing name. Okay, Leah, it is referring to the attitude that Leah displayed toward the wicked Esau. The Torah tells us that Leah hated the evil work of Esau. This is found in the Medrash Tanhuma. And that's why we have that Vene Leah Rakot, that Leah's eyes were weary from crying, that she did not want to land up in the portion of Esau. And therefore, Leah discloses that her special power of hatred of evil was transmitted to Shimon at birth. Ki shama Hashem ki snua nochi vayitein li gam et zeh vatikrat shmo Shimon. From conception, Shimon was naturally infused with the hatred of evil, a special holiness which was a gift from the womb. Ki shama Hashem ki snua nochi, and his name in Hashem heard this, Shimon. It's not that she was hated. Hashem heard how much she hated evil. That understanding, and again we'll talk more about this in Hashem next week, that understanding, that mindset of Leah went into Shimon. And Shimon, who was from birth, was somebody who could not stand injustice and couldn't stand evil. And Leah, we know, Levi, we also know, was designated with special holiness while in mother's womb. That the Rashi brings down on that he was called Meo Vaikrachmo, unlike all the other Shvatim Vatikra, she called. Hakadosh Baruch Hu himself calls it him Levi. It's now clear why it was Shimon and Levi who took particular offense at the defilement of their sister Dina. These two brothers were designated as the guardians of the holiness of Klal Yisrael. So the first level, we looked at it as they are the responsible ones, the Achim. This is looking at it on even a higher level. It's not that they're responsible just in terms of siblings. They're responsible for maintaining a level of holiness because that is their birthright. That's what they're all about. Hakizonaya said Achotenu is their duty to guard the holiness and sanctity of Klal Yisrael. And Yaakov understood this. It behooved them to attend to the violation committed by Shechem. Their violent approach to the brother Yosef now becomes clear. In their zeal to inculcate only holiness to the Jewish people, they were determined to eradicate anything that resembled the evil of Esau. And they saw in Yosef many of Esau's characteristics. Yosef, in their judgment, frequently engaged in evil reports. He was very much concerned with materialism, grooming his eyes, arranging his hair, about appearing handsome. The seed of the congregation of Hashem could not tolerate such apparent evil. Hence, as the guardianess of holiness, it was their duty to remove Yosef from the scene. We can now analyze the special lines between Shimon and Yehuda. Shimon represented and embodied the hidden prayer within his mother's heart, the prayer that only Hashem could hear. This prayer could not find expression in Olam Hazeh because it was too profound for words. That's why the Torah disguised in the form of the spies, because Hashem has heard. Only Hashem can grasp the depth of Leah prayer, which was Shimon's birthright, and will ultimately only become comprehensible to humans in the next world. Yehuda, on the other hand, is the articulated prayer. Hapam odeh Hashem. It's this world. It's very much connected of leadership in this world. Shimon is very much about the Olam Haba, the next world. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is a perfect example of this. Being in that cave for 12 years, he comes out and burns the world. He can't stand to see people wasting their time on frivolities of this world. The Shimon is the personality of the Olam Emes, the Olam Haba, the world of perfection. And it's very difficult for a Shimon to be found in this physical world. So Shimon was connected to Yehuda, almost as a balance, the one who represents this physical world, the leadership of this world. And it's interesting, in Yechezkel another, he speaks about that Shevet Shimon will receive his own portion. And it makes sense, because in that next future world, in the times of Mashiach, we'll be able to appreciate Shimon, and he'll be able to have a nachla, which means a place. We'll be able to feel comfortable in this world. Levi was spread out. They were given this ability. They were able to channel it better than Shimon was. They were able to take that feeling of hatred of evil and utilize it for the positive in the Chayka Egel and became the Levim. They were able to have the 48 cities. They're able to be more rooted in this world than the Shimon is. When I understand this, my friends, that Shimon and Levi represent a whole different dimension. They represent the dimension of the next world. They represent the dimension of hatred of evil. They represent the dimension of looking at this world from a whole different vantage point. It's with that vision I need to really look at all the stories of Shimon and Levi. It's interesting to note that there was no shofet, really, from the tribe of Shimon, of a real nature. He can't be in this world. He can't live in this world. He is in a whole different dimension. He can't be the leader of all the Shvatim. He's the one who, of the Imahos, who has the least role. With this in mind, we can also appreciate it. I'm just going to make mention of this. You know, the one story that must be coming to your head is obviously connected with the Rashi here. Well, if you tell me Shimon is so great, how do you understand the story of Zimri, who takes the Nasi from Shevet Shimon, who takes this Midianite woman in front of the all of Klal Yisrael, and the Pinchas has to come and kill them, and there was the Makefa, 24,000 people died, and how do you understand all of this? So I'd just like to make mention, so that we just have an intellectually full picture, because it's really one theme, and obviously we can't get into it now, that Rav Wolfson brings in Munari Techa, based on the Sfarim HaKadoshim, that you have to look at, he brings here from Rav Chaim Vital, that Zimri was one of the greatest of the Nesim. And I just quoted here one piece in 42. So just like Shlomo HaMelech, in his mind, envisioned marrying all of these non-Jewish women to convert them, to bring the whole world to L'takin Olam Machut Shakai, the recognition of God's oneness. That was his plan. V'nirali Shigamza Raita Kavanat Zimri. That was Zimri's, the head of Shimon's intention as well. V'ratzal Avi Limota Mashiach Haideshi Ish Gadol Kamo Yikach Eba Melech Mijam. Him taking this woman wasn't about physical pleasure, God forbid. It was about bringing Mashiach. It was about the ultimate, again, that kanos, that passion, as well as that vision of the future. And that's what it means. Vayikarev elachav etamijani doesn't mean that he brought her close to his brothers. It means that shiratzala karev otaliya adur elachav, that he's trying to bring her close to Yiddishkeit. And the problem that he had was he rushed it too fast, too soon. It was incomplete. Vo'il vayita kavanato k'sheira, his kavana was amazing. However, he avalhu miheret atzmo, He rushed himself. But he rushed it too fast, and she didn't convert with her whole heart. But again, Zimri had as an intention. Midian at that time was like the world power. His intention was to bring about the culmination. Now we enter into Eretz Yisrael, and the whole world will recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's obviously Pinchas, who's Eliyahu, who is the one who is the Mevaser HaGeulah, the one who is going to be the harbinger of the redemption. He was able to feel, again, Shimon and Levi, they're on their own wavelength. He was able to feel, it's not time yet. You're jumping the gun. And therefore, he was the one who killed Zimri. Your intentions are good, but it's not the right time and the right place. And Rav Wilson speaks about that Zimri is then Gilgalized into Rabbi Akiva, who is from Geirim, and he married Eshet Ternifus, who was a Megayer, and the 24,000 people that died in the Magefa were the 24,000 students who are in the Gilgul, who died by Rabbi Akiva students, and there's a lot of Torah on this, and it's very complex, and it's not what we're going to do today, but we have to understand that there is such a larger picture here, and that we see just such a small piece, and then we think from the small piece, wow, I understand the whole thing. Not true at all. So my friends, let's just take this two steps further. If Shimon and Levi are like the Olam Haba individuals in this world, and they really can't find themselves in this world because they're, you know, they can't stand any injustice. They can't stand any movement away from the level of perfection. So now I understand the Tzitzim Orva Shemesh, the Chernobyl Rebbe in 44 through 46, I understand the bracha that Yaakov Avinu gave to these sons. And he says, when he's cursing their anger, what he's saying is, people like this get angry very easily. And other people think, you know, they get angry easily because they're always mad at other people. He says, that's not what it's about at all. These people are always mad at themselves. They're always holding themselves up to a higher level of expectation. And if they didn't say Kriyat Shema correctly, and if they didn't do this bracha correctly, they're atzpanim, they're angry with themselves. That sitting on shpilkas about themselves is then translated. They have no patience for anyone else because they have no patience for themselves because they're always trying to be greater and greater. And here Yaakov Avinu is teaching Shimon and Levi this type of approach of living a Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai lifestyle is not Yiddishkeit. Yiddishkeit is to be ma'urav im habrios, is to be part of the people, is to be able that if you spend a few minutes having a schmooze with somebody, it's not a waste of your time. This is what part of Yiddishkeit is about, to be a wholesome person, to be a person who's always besimcha, a person who's a well-rounded person, a person who's not always critical of every single thing that they do. We're human. We move on. We can't, you know, hold on to that feeling of perfection our entire lives. It's not a healthy way. And that's why at the end of 45, Shimon v'Levi achim klei chamas b'charoteyam. They're always in a yira gedola. They're always in this fear, and that's why they're bekas. He says, v'kareh b'lashon ashkani frum. Right? This is what people call a frum person. He says, this is not what it's about. V'alkein eif sharli darez in abrios. And that's why he says, the bracha that Yaakov gives them should be, achalkein b'Yaakov afisein b'Yisrael. That they should be ma'orivim datam im abrios. This is the bracha. I want you to be with other people. Yaakov are the simple people. Yisrael are the greater people. But I want you to be with people all the time. I want you to be able to learn how to deal with people. I don't want you to take this high level of expectation of self and impose it on all those around you. It's not healthy. Achalkein b'Yaakov afitzein b'Yisrael is a bracha that Yaakov Avinu is giving them of how to take this quality and to temper it and to realize to be ma'urov b'imabrios, to be able to be pleasant among people, intermingle with people, is one of the greatest brachos. With this, my friends, I'd like to conclude. Let's just summarize and then conclude with an idea from Rav Hirsch that I was just dancing about when I saw. You know, there's always this, that one idea that you have. Hodel Hashem, I did this year just for this one idea. On the first level, it's self-knowledge. The bracha of self-knowledge is the bracha of knowing what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are. You have to temper the anger and use it for passion. And you have the ability of achim, of achrayos, of being brothers. You are the perfect candidates to be in Klal Yisrael, the teachers of Klal Yisrael. On the second level, it's also self-knowledge. It's the bracha of recognizing that who you are people who are holding yourselves and the world to a higher standard. This is not the way that one can live in this world, both in killing cities and you know, trying to destroy a brother, and in personal relationships. People can't relate to you. You have to be able to temper things down and be able to be me'urafim abriyos. I understand that your intentions are amazing, that you're on a very high level, but it has to be brought down into this world. With this understanding that Shimon and Levi have this tremendous passion, have this tremendous understanding of what is right and wrong, and that's like their natural birthright, we can now appreciate this gewaldic insight of Rav Hirsch, 47. It's not the intention of Mechalek to weaken something that hereto was whole, and that's why he's dividing them. Yaakov, the image of Jewish people in Golos, oppressed and persecuted. Yisrael, the image of Jewish people triumphant by the hand of God. Accordingly, the danger posed to the nation by the anger and impetuous of Shimon and Levi exists only when the nation is flourishing, when it constitutes a powerful community, which could easily be carried away by the influence of two united tribes who are filled with the awareness of their own power and aflame with the feeling of brotherhood. Therefore, afitzein b'Yisrael, in the flourishing state, they must be scattered. And indeed, that's why Levi had to be around. Shimon had to be, was not completely dependent. They were under Yehuda. Because if you put these two people together, when we are flourishing, and they see something going wrong, the two of them, with these two qualities, right? Really combining both levels. The quality of achrayus and the quality of a brotherhood and the quality of responsibility and the quality of what's right and wrong, these two can just, you know, take over the world. And it's dangerous. And they have to be separated and tempered. However, 48, in Golos, where the pressure of our fate weighs down on everything, and the nation itself is scattered, there the real and present danger is that all self-respect will be lost and all spiritual vitality will be stifled. To enable even the wandering Jewish peddler to proudly look down on the European street youth, to enable him to maintain his self-respect and his sense of belonging to his people, for that it's necessary, Achalkein BeYaakov. By scattering the tribes of Shimon and Levi among all the other tribes of the Jewish state, God did us a great kindness. For the natural result was that when the state was destroyed and the nation scattered in all directions, descendants of Shimon and Levi were always present. Keep in mind, in parentheses, if Shimon was under Yehuda, then Shimon is really found today like Yehuda is found. They're not part of the ten lost tribes. They're really very much intermingled with Yehuda, which is what Yaakov Avinu wanted for the future. Everywhere they would foster and nurture in us strength and courage, fervor and noble Jewish pride, thus assuring that the Jewish spirit remained alive and strong even after the demise of the Jewish state. From Shimon came scribes and teachers in the synagogue, and from Levi schools where the study of Torah was pursued. This is the greatest bracha that Yaakov Avinu foresaw at the moment of his death. It's a bracha of the future. When Klal Yisrael are going to be in need, when they're going to be scattered all over the world, who's going to be able to stand up there and give them the strength? Who's going to stand up there and give them vision? Who's going to stand up there and stand up for the principles and not be, you know, influenced and broken by that which is going around them? It's Shimon and Levi who, A, feel an achrayus, the responsibility for the rest of Klal Yisrael, who have this fire and passion, and who stand up for the values of what is really right and correct, and they will not bend to outside pressure and to conforming to the norms and ways of the goyim. Shimon and Levi who understand what is right and will stand up for what is right. They are are spread out. Afitzein beYaakov, achalkein beYisrael. I'm going to spread them out. When Klai Yisrael are doing well, I'm spreading them out because they're going to be too powerful, too dangerous. But when Klai Yisrael aren't doing well, they are the ones who are going to be on the front lines building up Klai Yisrael. They're the ones who give us the hope. They're the ones who push us forward. They're the ones who give us our identity. And therefore, when push comes to shove, this is the greatest bracha that Yaakov Avinu is not only giving to Shimon and Levi, he's giving, because all the brachos affect all the tribes, he's giving to all Klai Yisrael ad hayom hazeh, that we have people in Klai Yisrael who are passionate, we have people in Klai Yisrael who have their vision and glasses on straight, and these are the people that enable us to remain who we are, despite all the influences, despite all the trials and tragedies of Klai Yisrael, and for them we owe a tremendous debt of gratitude.